And so my talk is, if water lettuce is native, why is it taking over? So before we start talking about why it's taking over, I want to introduce you to water lettuce. This is our culprit. This is Pistia stratiotes. It's in the Araceae family, so it's an aroid. It is a monocot, and it's in a monotypic genus. So there are no other species of Pistia that are extant at this point, although there's some evidence that there were species in the past that are now extinct. This is a floating aquatic plant, so it floats on the surface of the water. It does have roots, but those roots just dangle in the water column. It's not an anchored plant, so it's very mobile. These can get up to 2 feet or so across, so it's a fairly large plant. If you look at this upper picture up here, which it's just not going to let me, there we go, this one. I mean, they're cute when they're small, right? That's my hand. I'm not a giant, so that little plant's only a few inches across. But the important thing to note in that picture is right here, this plant's already pupping. So we have a plant that has, seven or eight leaves. It is already reproducing by vegetative means and making progeny. One of these plants can double its biomass and coverage in less than 2 weeks. So it's a highly invasive, highly aggressive plant. The individual leaves are up to a foot long or so. They have sort of a scalloped margin, as you can see from these pictures. They're thick, dull green in color, and they're sessile, so we don't have petioles like we do with a lot of species. We've just got attachment of those leaves right at the base of the plant. The roots of water lettuce are light and feathery, and that's just sort of a characteristic to help you separate it out from some of our other floating species in Florida. And it has inconspicuous flowers. It's arranged in a spathe and spadix inflorescence, very typical of the aroids. And it does produce seeds, and it can revegetate from seeds and recruit fairly easily after a drawdown or dewatering event. But for the most part, this species spreads mostly by vegetative reproduction and making those pups. As far as the distribution, origin, and legal status of water lettuce, it's sort of convoluted. So its distribution is pantropical. It's found essentially everywhere except Antarctica. So it's very broadly distributed. It's used as a water garden plant worldwide, and that's probably responsible for its pantropical distribution. Its origin is considered cryptogenic, so we're not certain where this plant comes from. Historically, we have thought that it was native to Africa or South America, but now there are some rumblings that it might be native to the United States as well. That's sort of the basis of this talk. It's been banned or classified as noxious in a number of states in the United States, including Alabama, California, Connecticut, South Carolina, and Texas. And in Florida, this is a Class 2 prohibited aquatic plant. So what that means is the only entities that are allowed to intentionally culture this plant in Florida are those nurseries that have a permit and culture them to ship the plants out of state. So we're not allowed to sell these in the state. It happens anyway. So I've got a couple arguments for native status of water lettuce in Florida, and I'm going to kind of play devil's advocate and be intentionally obtuse a little bit and naive a little bit because I want to foster and encourage discussion when we get to the end of this workshop. So I'm going to throw some things out. I'm going to leave some things out as well. But we're going to start with arguments that are used for native status of water lettuce in Florida. And the primary basis for this assessment is Bartram's travels and fossil evidence. As far as Bartram's travels, this is a line drawing that William Bartram did. He came through Florida and other eastern states in the 1700s, mid-1700s. And if you look down here, that's kind of, sort of, a water lettuce. They didn't decide that he was describing it just from that picture. He did name Pistia, which, of course, is the genus of this family. So he said that he saw these in Florida's waters, in Lake George. He also indicated he saw them in the St. Johns River. So, wow, okay, they've been in Florida since at least the mid-1700s, so they've probably been there forever, right? Well, not necessarily. A couple things to keep in mind is before Bartram did this survey, these floras along the east coast of the United States, the Spanish had settled St. Augustine a good 200 years before Bartram did his surveys. These were widely cultivated as ornamentals and water garden plants even then. They do have some ethnobotanic value despite having calcium oxalate crystals. So it's very possible that these plants were introduced well before Bartram arrived and saw them, and maybe he just thought they were native because they were there. He did describe miles-long floating islands of Pistia, so it's not like they were being well-behaved then. They were very broadly distributed and growing very aggressively, but that does not mean they're native just because they were there when he did his surveys. In addition to being used as ornamentals in water gardening, they were used quite a bit as dry ballasts in boats. So they could have been introduced that way as well, along with being ornamentals in water gardens. And also, Bartram described orange trees in Florida. That's great. They're not native to Florida. They may be our hallmark fruit, but orange trees, citrus, not native to Florida. So just because Bartram described Pistia being in Florida in the 1750s does not make it native. Also, Dioscorides and Theophrastus described plants in the Nile River over 2,000 years ago. So it was present then. I mean, could it be present and native to both places? Yeah, it's possible. But, you know, it was found somewhere else a very long time before Bartram saw these plants in Florida. Pistia was also shown in hieroglyphics in Egypt. So these are historically from somewhere else. They've been described and well described a long time ago in other parts of the world that are not South Florida. Our other argument for water lettuce being native is fossil records. And this was mostly spurred by a paper written by Jason Evans out of Georgia. And this was published in 2013. This idea has been sort of kicking around for a number of years that fossil records show that Pistia must be native to Florida because it's in the fossil records. So this sort of was a newer take on that. And just to give you an idea, these figures are from Evans' paper. I didn't check with him, but I'm assuming since I'm citing him, it's okay that I include his figures in this. So he has fossil records, up to 12,000 years ago found in Vero Beach, evidence of seeds up to 11,000 years ago in Lake Annie in the middle of the state. But they're fossils of Pistia in every country, globally. They're everywhere. The fact that they're in Florida's fossil records in a fairly recent era doesn't really mean anything. That doesn't make them native. And in fact, there were seeds in fossils in Europe from 23 million years ago. So that sort of suggests these plants were elsewhere a very long time ago, and their fairly recent occurrence in Florida on the global timeline doesn't really mean anything. I mean, this is the distribution of the plant and fossil records globally of Pistia, and we're going to get to this later. The specialist herbivores, we're going to talk about that in a minute. But for now, we're talking about water lettuce being native or not native due to fossil records. And I argue that fossil evidence that was discussed by Evans is not sufficient to say that Pistia is native to Florida because we've got fossil records of this plant globally. So next, we have arguments for its introduced status in Florida. And the two primary ones that I'm going to talk about are its overly exuberant growth and its lack of co-evolved specialists. As far as water lettuce's aggressive growth, up until the 50s, as much as 125,000 acres of Florida's waters were covered with floating plants. So typically, water lettuce and water hyacinth, another introduced species, grow together, and it can be hard to sort them out from a management perspective, so they tend to be managed together, and they're just referred to as floating plants, and that's true to this day. And ironically, water hyacinth, which has been our biggest aquatic problem forever, is now almost in check, and water lettuce is starting to fill the niche left by hyacinth, but that's a story for another day. Our state agency that oversees all herbicide treatments is the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, FWC, and their invasive plant management report from 2016-2017 shows that they treated 3,000 acres of water hyacinth, of floating plants. Again, they're grouped together in Florida, and that was in 246 public bodies of water, and they spent close to $5 million managing just those floating plants. And you may say, but there are only 3,000 acres. There used to be 125,000. Why bother? This is the hallmark of maintenance control. If we don't keep these populations to a dull roar, they explode very quickly because, again, they can double their biomass and coverage in less than 2 weeks. So they are very aggressive growers. What you see in this picture is not just a ground cover on dry land. That is water lettuce with 6 feet of water underneath it. So it forms very dense, very impenetrable populations that block the light and oxygen interface and shade out the submersed plants. So it's certainly a bad plant, and those are the problems caused by this invasive or nuisance plant. But so is that aggressive growth enough of an argument to say that this is an introduced species? Well, not necessarily. We have plants that we know are native and grow aggressively. In this upper corner, we have a plant called hair grass or slender spike rush. This is Eleocharis baldwinii. The center picture is cape grass or eelgrass, Vallisneria americana. Both of these are aggressively growing submersed plants. And the cape grass is actually used in restoration in a number of sites, and it's intensively managed in other sites because it does grow aggressively. We have floating-leaved plants as well that are native but grow exuberantly. So we have yellow water lily, Nymphaea mexicana. We have spatterdock, Nuphar advena. We have emergent plants that we know are native but still grow aggressively. In this picture, we've got cattail, typha species, and pickerel weed, Ponderia cordata, both planted in a number of cases and managed in others. Despite that, they are native. And we also have a native, sometimes aggressive floating plant. This is frog's bit, Limnobium spongia. And this is another one of our native plants that grows very aggressively. So just because water lettuce grows aggressively doesn't necessarily mean that it's not native. For our final argument on water lettuce being introduced or exotic in Florida, it's a matter of enemies. There are no co-evolved specialists or insects that feed exclusively on water lettuce in Florida. Alan Dre and his colleagues at the USDA's Invasive Plant Research Lab have done a lot of work on this. They had a couple publications in the late 80s and early 90s where they went out and they surveyed water lettuce from 61 different water bodies. They pulled at least 20 plants of water lettuce from each of those. They found 98 different insect taxa. 13 of those were herbivorous, and 6 of those herbivorous species were actually eating water lettuce. However, those insects were polyphagous, meaning they were eating many species. They were not specialized, and they were not co-adapted to only eat water lettuce. On my other slides, I had an or not up there, right? Now we've got a water lettuce is introduced probably, and this is my argument for water lettuce being introduced. In Argentina, in Chaco Province, they found 22 different polyphagous or multi-species eating insects on water lettuce. So it's about the same number that Dre found on his populations. It's about the same number of generalist insects that have been described on Florida plants. But in Argentina, at least 7 of those are oligophagous, or only eating one or two species, weevils. And these are eating water lettuce almost exclusively. In Central and South America, there are 13 different oligophagous, or individual species, eating arthropods. So these are insects that are co-adapted to survive only on water lettuce. It's the only thing they can live on and eat and actually successfully reproduce. So this suggests coevolution because that's what's keeping these plants in check in their native range. And this is called an enemy release hypothesis. And that is our explanation for why water lettuce is taking over Florida. It doesn't have these co-evolved specialist insects that are eating it. They've been released from the pressure of their enemy in their native range. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And regardless, Florida managers do not care where this plant is from. This made Holmes' list in the 70s of the world's worst weeds, and the Global Invasive Species Database screenshot, which you see there on the right, also tags this as one of the 100 worst weeds. I know it's blurry, but I wanted to kind of emphasize some stuff on this. So this is the 100 of the worst tag right here. And I know you can't read it because it's little, but under this orange bar is the list of all the places water lettuce has been introduced and is considered exotic. Down here at the bottom with the blue bar, this is its official considered native status, South America. That's it. So that's my story on water lettuce. I thank you for your time, and I'm just going to move us on to the next speaker because I want questions to wait till the end so we can talk about all of this because we want audience participation today.